From the front line.
It's not going to work, man.
From the tailgates. Representing KTYR and its stakeholders, we are the Forum for the Fans, the Bleed Blue Show. Flying solo, here's your host, Steve.
Yeah, we are the Forum for the Fans, the Bleed Blue Show, the Rick Podcast with Ranger Proud. We're going to talk with our squad as far as the defensemen, how we're looking on paper. Before even in the NHL season, that's another question in itself. And where the hell do we stand with that? Talk a little bit of D'Angelo, some Adam Fox, some Ryan Lindgren, Jacob Trouba, you know, stuff like that with the blue shirts. So see where we stack up as far as have we gotten better? Are we a better team? And the unknown with the NHL, that's a whole another part of this episode that all ties into the defensemen and as well as the next couple of episodes with the forwards before the start of an NHL season, whenever that happens to be. But that's why we'll try to figure it out logically what the NHL is going to do, and we'll put this and piece this all together, man. The last time we had this episode of the Ring Podcast with Ranger Prowl, we were joined with Girls of True Blue talking to NHL retro jerseys. That was a fun, lighthearted episode as far as the different colors and us being fashion experts, quote unquote. But now we're back to as far as serious hockey, on paper, where do the blue shirts stand, personnel wise, schematically within the division and whatever the season may be and how the season is going to play out. The Ring Podcast with Ranger Proud, of course, RP, Ranger Proud, the Facebook and Twitter, and of course, a rider for all the platforms, man. I mean, at this point, I just let him do what he do, man. RP, what's going on? Hope all is well. How's everything, sir?
Hey, Steve, how's everything going with you? I'm doing pretty good here, you know, day by day. Waiting to
yes,
see
sir, day by day.
Hockey. Day by day. Right, hope right. Everybody had a good Thanksgiving and enjoy themselves. Hope they get to see their families. Ooh, the big taboo.
right. I know, right? It's a weird year. It's a different year than we all never had before, man. It's a situation, man. We didn't really talk about the defenseman. This year in particular, RP, you already know, since the conclusion of the season, once the Rangers were eliminated by the Hurricanes, normally what we usually do is assess how the players did personnel-wise and what area of the team they played. We didn't do that this year. We kind of looked at the approach as far as, okay, well, we can reassess that heading into the bubble before COVID, after the season now is long gone. It's close to a start of a new season, whenever that may be, and we'll have to discuss that on this episode. But the defenseman, I mean, Tony D'Angelo, we kind of mentioned it on with the arbitration, and he got his contract. Trouba, let's break down Trouba, Fox. Ryan Lindgren and then Jack Johnson, who replaces Stahl, and where's the improvement there? Let's talk about all this, man. So how do you look at the defenseman as a whole? We'll get to the NHL stuff towards later at the end of this episode, because that's a whole different type of questioning as far as not just the Rangers but the entire league.
You know, as a whole, I don't think the defensive unit got worse, but I don't think they improved. The Rangers traded Mark Stahl to Detroit, and then instead of going younger or maybe someone a little bit more inexperienced to be that third defensive pairing to grow, they went and signed 33-year-old Jack Johnson, who was a favorite of John Davidson's, but apparently he's not really a favorite of anybody in the media, the fans. It was a surprising move. It was, you know, a $1.15 million deal for 1 year. He's at the end of his career. He's the oldest defenseman on the team at 33. I just don't see where he fit in as a way to improve the team from where they ended last year. You know, since the rebuild and the progression or the positive steps that the team has made to get to where they are now, Jeff Gorton's made some really good moves. And I don't want to totally knock this one because, you know, Johnson can come in and be that third pair defense when the team is looking for and be lights out and make it work for a year. But now looking at it today, I don't think it helped the defensive core improve, which is a shame because that's really where they need to. In my opinion, is other than the center position with the team, they need to work defensively. You know, you have Brendan Smith. He's 31 years old. he's got, you know, he was in a lot of buyout rumors, but it didn't really happen or it hasn't happened yet. And then you bring Jack Johnson on, and all of a sudden, that may or may not be your third defensive pairing, and that's a 31 and a 33-year-old playing in a, you know, in a young man's hockey game, and it's not to take away from either of those players, but I don't see next year, let's say, Steve, we're now looking for two defensemen possibly. I mean, both of those guys are going to be unrestricted free agents at the end of the season. Now, maybe the Rangers are biding time for a K'Andre Miller, a Nils Lundqvist, maybe even Anthony Boteto that the Rangers also have on their roster as a defenseman, but he's 30 years old. So the direction isn't clear of where they are looking defensive-wise. I don't know if maybe they're figuring after the expansion draft they'll do something with free agency. Maybe they're hoping someone from the minors might be able to step up, but they don't have a lot of big-name defensemen that could come up. So it's not that they don't have good players. They have a lot of young players who just might not be ready to step onto the NHL ice after the season. So I guess, and it's so hard because we don't know if there's going to be minor league hockey. Will the AHL be playing? They're already having trouble. I'm reading in, I think it was in Sweden where, or in Finland, I forget which one, where they had to shut down because of COVID this week. So there's a lot of things that are up in the air that really interfere with the progression of our hockey players. Of all the team's hockey players, but, you know, we're talking Rangers here. There's a lot going on that we are unsure about that can kind of disrupt the progression that the team has made. So the Rangers have to be really careful where they go from here with this.
You're absolutely correct. And I looked at it with Jack Johnson, like, replacing Mark Stahl, just looking at it from a locker room standpoint, was there really a full, like, did we really upgrade, like, as far as, you know, what Stahl meant to the team? Now, I know you're more a Mark Stahl fan than most Ranger fans, but Mark, let's be real. I haven't been high on Mark Stahl because it's more skill set than anything, but you just can't replace locker room presence and how the long tenure, I mean, slashing his, you know, getting rid of his salary because he traded him and just taking a pay cut to get Jack Johnson. Was it really worth it?
True. Well, it was worth it if you look at the salary. The Rangers saved a lot of money because remember, when they traded Detroit, they took Stahl's entire cap. They took his whole salary. That's why that trade looked even better than what it really was. And myself being a big Mark Stahl fan, from a business standpoint, that's an awesome trade. That was an awesome trade. All that money to come off the cap, that was wiped out, an incredible move by Gordon. So you couldn't knock it at all. If you're looking at it player to player, I would have rather kept Mark Stahl than getting Jack Johnson. But even with Jack Johnson's salary, the Rangers still saving $3.5-4 million. So you can understand how it all shook out, and it came out last minute. There weren't a lot of big defensemen to go after. This isn't permanent. You know, they could send Johnson down or use him as a seventh defenseman. It isn't anything that's lights out. This is how it's going to be. This is just how the team will be starting whenever that may be. And by the way, Steve, it was the Finnish league. Finland shut down all their leagues because of COVID-19 spike. So that happened this morning, today. So that's that's another, you know, Tomo Runonen was playing there for the Rangers, one of our prospects. So that's just something to look at. It's all over. The next couple of months are going to be really hard for everyone. So they just don't know what's going to happen. We don't know if we're going to have a league this year, never mind minor league. So it's a real – Gordon has to make sure that he has experienced guys on the ice too, and I think everyone has to look at that from that standpoint. He may not be the player everybody wanted, but Jack Johnson's played a lot of hockey. He's been around a long time. He's won Stanley Cups. He knows how to play the game. He may not be – his level now might not be what it once was, but – seeing what else is going on all around, you have to be able to field three pairings on defense and, you know, and not rush a K'Andre Miller. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Now, the problem is if you don't have AHL, which it looks like they may not be having, the American Hockey League, we don't know yet, then they're hoping that the NHL will expand the team's rosters a little bit, and then you would think K'Andre Miller would be up with the club, and that can change the whole process of how things develop. If the Rangers are allowed, if the NHL teams are allowed to bring up more players, well, then Keandre Miller may get some chances without having all that pressure on him. You know, it was great what Ryan Lindgren and Adam Fox did last year, but it was also really hard. You know, two rookies in the NHL getting all that ice time, all that pressure, and Ranger fans were lucky to see they didn't make a lot of mistakes. They didn't make those errors that sometimes you see a rookie defenseman make when you have a guy like Connor McDavid or Ovechkin coming down on you. But will that happen every year? It tends not to. So at this point, the Rangers now might be able to take it a little bit slower with Keandre Miller, because, you know, that's what we keep hearing, Steve. You read it and hear it. Miller's ready. He's not. He hasn't made that jump yet. He's only played college, and no one really played last year. A lot of these guys have just been sitting around waiting. So there's going to be a huge speed difference for a guy like Miller when he comes to either Hartford or the Rangers, because he just hasn't played in over a year. So I think everyone just needs to be a little bit slow with that. You don't want to burn him out. You don't want to blow his confidence. And with that theory, I could see why the Rangers went after a Jack Johnson. But like I said, if it doesn't work out, there's always a trade. They could send him to the minors. They can make him a seventh defenseman, bring someone else along. This is just how the season's going to start. In no way does it mean how the season will be in the middle or in the end. So I think everyone just has to see where we go with it.
Right. You're absolutely correct about that, as far as that defenseman spot is a stopgap situation with Nazem Lindquist or Keandre Miller. As far as player development, that's kind of where the Rangers are trying to get to, and it's kind of hard where you don't have those guys actively getting those reps on a lower circuit to get it adjusted to a non-college or a different league speed. You're absolutely correct about that. So it's just a patience issue with Ranger fans. They look – everything's instant gratification. You can't just throw guys in there just because – you like what he did in college. You have to make sure the timing is right. They're actually ready. You nailed it on the head with that. And then also the alternative, you kind of hinted on it, as far as you could always go a free agent stopgap with another guy next season if you feel the other guys are still not ready. You still could play it out like that. So I definitely understand what you're saying about that, and I totally agree. And then you're right as far as the Rangers making it a business decision with Staal. There's a give and a take with it, is because you just can't replace, and it kind of goes with Hank Lundqvist as far as with him with the goalie unit and just as a team, the franchise, how everybody looks at him from the top on down to the fans, and then as well as Staal, not to a lesser degree with Lundqvist, you just can't replace all that experience, those two particular guys wearing blue shirts. But, yeah, as far as the defenseman, because Jack Johnson had his struggles while he was, you know, bounced around the later part of his career because of how he was not able to pair properly in the systems, whether it was Columbus, Pittsburgh, however you want to look at it. And how does that fit with the Rangers now? If you're pairing him with a Brendan Smith, how is that going to work? I mean, how can you foresee that working? How's David? You know, how you think Quinn's going to adjust if that's not working, and having that extra defenseman in that rotation just in case it does not work. You know, like how would you game plan around it? Because we could talk about the top four defensemen. I think they've had a good run, but then you're trying to shore up the bottom, or you're going to have to add extra time on the ice for Adam Fox or Lindgren, and we don't want to rough that development. You know, like how do you see that? And it's hard to answer that because we don't know the schedule, we don't know the matches, but then at the same time, you want to have an idea from a scheduling and matchup. You know, I think it's probably going to be top heavy with the division. That's how I think it's going to happen. You can give me your opinion on that, but how far as the pairings, you kind of mentioned with Smith and Johnson, or they may go a different route with implementing with Petrova. I don't know. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, see, I was thinking the same thing. And, you know, looking at the – if you said right now that the top six would be Trouba, D'Angelo, Smith-Johnson, Lindgren, and Fox, well, Lindgren and Fox were extremely successful last season. So you would think we're going to keep them two together. So now do you put two really good defensemen and two – I'm not sure about defensemen? I don't think so. So I would probably go with I would go with Brendan Smith – and Trouba, and then Anthony D'Angelo and Johnson. But the problem with that is now you're taking away from D D'Angelo's ice time. I think whoever you put with Johnson, you take away with the ice time. So then I flip back Steve and I go, well, then D'Angelo and Truba would be better together, Lindgren and Fox together, and then Brendan Smith and Jack Johnson together.
Right, right, right.
Kind of makes sense. It kind of works. But whatever really looks simple on paper for the Rangers normally doesn't work out. And I think it's crucial, especially if we're having a short season, which it might be, that you want Lindgren and Fox to start together and let them play themselves out of that pairing. As the way last season ended, I wouldn't want Quinn to come on and go, well, you know, I know you two are good, but the way it's laid out now, I'm going to split yous up. Because all season, you're going to go, whenever a mistake or an error is made, well, you know, if you had Fox and Lindgren out there, that probably wouldn't have happened. Or maybe they could step it up a notch and keep a one-goal game, not become a two-goal deficit kind of a game. So it all depends how the team wants to give it a shot. There's not going to be many exhibition games. If they even go through with it, it might be just one or two exhibition games. I'm not seeing a long time before they jump right into this. Timing is of the essence. So I'm sure now Quinn's sitting down with an idea of one or two different combinations. And if he does get two exhibition games, maybe we're just going to flip-flop and see what happens. I can tell you just based from what I've read, I would think any sort of training camp the Rangers begin now would be extremely similar to the return to play training camp, meaning I don't think there's going to be many players battling for roster spots, especially if they expand the roster to bring more guys up. If there isn't minor league and he knows he has those guys up, I think he's going to want to get his top guys, his top 12 forwards and six defensemen ready to go right off the bat. Play a 48-game season, it's going to go fast. Why am I saying 48-game season? Because I really don't see us starting January 1st. Does anyone see the NHL starting a week from today, a month from today? It would be really, really
difficult. We'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Right. But you see, but because of that, Steve, that's how you have to sort of plan the roster you're going to set up and how you're going to do your training camp. If that's the case, and this is going to be a quick and go, 2-3 week kind of deal, he's not going to have time for players battling for training for spots. I think he's going to put his guys that he's going to put in there, and they'll play their way out, and guys that are on the sidelines will be able to jump in, especially when they expand, which I'm almost certainly think they're going to expand the roster. So I would think that's how I would go. Me, I would start Smith and Johnson as your third pair. Little risky, the two oldest guys on the team, but how many minutes are they really going to get in the early going anyway?
That's the key. That's the key. Right?
How many? I mean, yeah. I just don't see how much ice time. I think they're going to give the other two pairings a little bit of a break. I think Brendan Smith will get more ice time than Johnson, because you can also use Brendan Smith on the penalty kill. He was good with that last year. It puts a lot of pressure on a guy like Truba to really find his offense that the team's paying him $8 million a year for. And he was coming along. You know, it took him a little bit of time. Granted, it was taking him time. He wasn't playing bad. We were just expecting a lot more production out of him. But let's remember, he's a passing, he's an assist kind of guy. You know, he's not going to be put in the fucking.
RP, how you feel about
like,
that? That's part of all this too, man. With Truba and
last year was his worst year as a pro, which is kind of almost his worst year, point wise as a pro. I mean, in 2018 he only had 24 points. This past season he had 27 points. But mind you, in that 2018 season he only played in 55 games. So if you look break down all the seasons, he didn't have a great season. He did come on strong, I thought, toward the end of the season. I thought he stood more relaxed. He didn't let all the pressure build up on him of carrying the team at all. And I think he'll have a better second year in New York than he did a first year in New York. And they're going to need that. Because if Truba struggles, you know, you can only replace so many defensemen. There are only so many high-scoring, like top-quality D-men that become available. So the Rangers really need the group that they have here to really prosper now. And, you know, and they could. You know, they were working with Anthony D'Angelo a long time, and last year he had a really solid year. He's playing good hockey. They gave him a nice two-year contract. So I expect to see him to continue to progress. He was really good on the power play last year. He was scoring points. I mean, he had 53 points last season in 68 games. Nothing horrible, nothing great, but he was also a plus 12. He was definitely coming into his own. He's been here a couple of seasons now. this will be his fourth season since the trade with Arizona and all. I expect big things out of him. I took him to keep playing the way he played. When he plays with confidence, Steve, he's a solid defenseman. And you saw a lot of that last season. So that's Truber and D'Angelo right there. If they play not over their potential, if they play the way they're supposed to play, them two are going to be fine. We already know Lindgren and Fox can only get better. They had a great year last year.
It could get worse.
Now with a year under their belt, they have to get better. Can you imagine Fox playing better?
We don't know. I mean, I think me and you can agree. We project them to be better, but what if they do take a regression for whatever reason? Like, how do the Rangers look with those two? We're talking about
patience.
Lindgren and Fox. What's your thoughts on that?
With Lindgren and Fox, you have to be a little patient because you're right. The sophomore jinx might jump in. It's been a very, very unusual year. I mean, as a club, they've only played three games since March. So let's, you know, look at that too. You can skate with teammates and shoot around, but nothing is NHL competition. So you're going to have to show a little bit of patience. You have to expect maybe a little bit of a setback. But I tell you what, I don't think there's going to be that much backtracking. I really don't. I think Fox got that year under his belt, and he is ready to take off. I mean, his name, he didn't get nominated for the Rookie of the Year, but his name was mentioned a lot. He has a lot of confidence. You know the thing with Fox? He's a smart hockey player. And you could take a step back in skill and mental errors and all, but I don't see him doing that. And to me, Lindgren is another Dan Girardi. Loves to take the body. He's very smart with the puck. He's not fancy. He has good speed. And maybe I'm being too overly optimistic, but I just don't see them two taking that step backwards. I just don't. I think they have a pair that's going to be here for a long while. I've said that last year. And I know I'm excited to see them play. Of course, things happen, you know, injuries. And sometimes things that are out of their control happen. If Truber and D'Angelo just are not working out, or if Smith and Johnson are just too much of a liability,
right,
they might be forced to break up Lindgren and Fox, which could mess up their game.
Exactly.
So it's very hard to say this is what they're going to do. That's why the seventh defenseman is so important. Competition makes players better. It doesn't weaken players. People don't believe, they shouldn't be worried about it. Everyone should always be battling for a spot. You should never be content when you get on the ice. Now, if you got a guy, we're just throwing names around, Igor Rygov, K. Andre Miller, even a Libra Hayek, who didn't play well at all last year. But these guys are now another year into it. If these guys put a little bit of pressure, these three young kids, I mean, Rykov is 23, Miller's 20, Hayek has NHL experience, and he's 22. They don't even need to play great hockey. Them just being there is going to put pressure on guys like Smith and Johnson to play their asses off because they got 300 kids waiting to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if they come in, they may never come out. You know, Kendra Miller may get that taste and say, I'm staying here. We know Rykov, if he could get going, is a good defenseman. So there's a lot on the line. And the Rangers have other defensemen that may not be ready yet, but might get an opportunity because of an expanded roster to step on the ice. And then you never know what's going to happen. So they need to have seven defensemen. That, in my opinion, is key.
I agree with that.
To me, it's more important to have a seventh defenseman than a 13th forward, if I had to choose, especially with the way the Rangers' defense is set up. Just because of the way their defense is set up, but they have these.
I was going to say, right. I agree with like 90% of that, because the only thing I'm looking at it, the way you kind of laid it out, but I don't want to underestimate the unforeseen circumstance. If the injury bug happens, now we have a COVID situation all teams have to deal with that we never had to deal with before, as far as players may have to sit out. So if a Lindgren and Fox is not clicking because of an injury, like let's use the injury thing, that could throw this thing out of whack too. If so one of those guys get hurt, how do the Rangers adjust with Quinn? I'm throwing it out there. I'm speaking out loud when I say this. Nothing is perfect. You know, these guys do get hurt. They're going to get sick, or they could get sick. And if they, and
it's one of the reasons why
happen, what's going to happen? But I want to go back to Truba because I really want to harp on it, and I want then you can fire away. And this is one of the reasons I was. If you remember, we had those podcasts when we signed them, and most Ranger fans were loving the contract. Where I wasn't in love with it. You may not remember that. Maybe you don't remember that conversation.
No, I remember that.
You weren't
big on the money and for what he puts out point production wise and what he does on the ice. It wasn't to you a great.
You kind of see that played out this past season because, like I said before, when I said it at the time, and you watch Neil Pionk kind of reap the benefits what Jacob Trouba had did. You know, they kind of flip roles. Like, you know, Pionk goes there, Trouba comes back, Trouba comes here, but Trouba was playing with more established forwards in a system he was used to than coming to a new team. Yeah, we'll say, okay, that's after year one. The Rangers roster is totally different than when he first came onto the scene. And what he was asked to do in Winnipeg, especially where you've got a Wheeler, you got Scheifele and Connor and Laney and Ehlers, you have a whole bunch of guys who take a load off of his game, and he could pretty much do what he wants to do at the point, especially on the power play. He had free reign. I didn't see that situation in him flourishing in Winnipeg translating into the Rangers. And that's the reason why I wasn't big on the money in the contract, because now you saw what happened when Pionk kind of went there. He kind of has a shell of Trouba's season of that system. Let me go back to Trouba. Now, if Rangers are going to think they're going to get the version of the Winnipeg Jets, I just don't see that. Not to say that Trouba is a bad player, because I think we could use him, get him better. Now we have more better forwards. So how do you – okay, we say that Trouba struggled, right? And we say that he got better at the end of this season.
Well,
we said he
struggled point-wise. On the ice, I overall defense, I don't think he played horrible. I think for some reason everyone thought Trouba was this point-producing machine. And if you look at his numbers, he's not.
Well, that's the thing, RP. I agree with that. I think it depends what
you're looking for.
I agree with you, RP. Fans are looking at it statistically when you're just looking at it from the play of hockey. I don't know. Do you think – this is more of a fan-level question for you. I don't think Trouba's going to live up to what the fans may think stat-wise he was getting in Winnipeg. That's the question.
Well,
the
problem with that theory, though, Steve, is I don't think Trouba or the organization can worry about or – even get involved with things that the fans overall aren't looking at. I don't think just because you sign a guy for $8 million, you have to look at what you're signing for. Trouba came over to the Rangers and at a bang was the top defenseman on the team, had to carry the weight of the whole defensive core, was in the middle of the whole Henrik Lundqvist situation, was playing in New York for the first time. I know he's a professional, you know, moving to New York, but there was a lot more to it. It's not just assists and points. And I think as the season progressed, he played – I mean, the guy averaged almost 23 minutes a game. Okay? He had 128 blocked shots. He threw 173 hits. He was playing the game the team wanted him to play. I think his mental mistakes early in the season – was him trying harder than he had to. Was him trying to show the fans, I'm gonna make that perfect pass to Panarin for the breakaway goal. I'm gonna score that great goal that I know I can do on a power play. And I think what happened was, you know, he got caught up in the hype, literally. And then once things settled down after the first couple of months, he played a much better game defensively. And he was scoring some goals, not a lot, but he was doing some things on the power play. You know, he didn't have a lot of power. I think he had 3 power play goals last year. I'm just looking over the stats now. No, he had 4 power play goals last season, which was the most power play goals he's had. Yes, it's not a lot. But, again, fans have to look at the whole picture. I'm looking for –
I agree with you.
A D-man $8 million. I'm looking for the guy that's going to lead the team out there. And forget if he has the C on the shoulder or not. You know, the defensemen all have to look up to that one guy on the blue line. That's true, man. I just think, you know, we've seen it many times with players coming into New York. He didn't crumble. It just took him a little bit of time to pick up the pieces to get going. And I think fans have to accept that. I think fans have to look at that and go, all right, you know, this is going to be a guy. If he could be the guy that when he's out there, he's that shutdown defenseman, that the top players are going to have to break their ass to get a goal against us, and he's going to hammer people and beat the hell out of people, and then make that great head man first pass out of our end. You know, what is Micheletti, and even when JD was the announcer, was like, the first pass out of your zone is like the setup play. It is the crucial pass. If he can do all of that, then that's what we got. So I understand you were saying you didn't think the number, dollar-wise, was valued for what, you know, Trouba is, but I think he could be that defenseman that justifies it, not always on the score sheet. So I guess you just have to decide, or everyone has to decide, what kind of defenseman do you want him to be?
No, I get that, RP. You're answering how I thought it was going to play out with the fan base. My whole issue with the contract was the value of how the fans were going to look at it, because for the aforementioned things I've said as far as how his game was with those players versus him coming onto the team now, I think this is an issue with fans. This is I think the fans are going to get irritated if they're not seeing it stat-wise, because this is what Quinn, you know, this is what Lenny Ruff at the time when he was an assistant coach and Dan Quinn, as far as, you know, what they want Trouba to do, even at that contract. I didn't think – I was just saying from the perspective fans are going to get irritated, and if the fans get irritated, you know how this rolls in the city, man. Like, you know, this is going to get up into the papers, and there's going to be pressure. And they're looking at it from a business-wise versus just the operations on the ice on what they're really wanting him to do, especially when you've got these other guys who are, you know, we haven't talked about them yet as much as Tony D'Angelo and what we could expect out of him. You know, the Tony D'Angelos and want Fox and Lindgren to progress, because if they progress and they may take a step back for Jacob Trouba's offensive game, I think I'm cool with that.
Yeah, I think Ranger fans are going to have more to look at with Brendan Smith and Jack Johnson. I mean, if you're looking at it from that standpoint, I don't think Trouba is going to be what the fans are griping at for the most part. But I see what you're saying. I just think, how do I say it? I don't think, personally, I'm not worried what Ranger fans think based on a salary, how Trouba should play. My thing is when Trouba's out there, that the puck doesn't go in the net. I know it sounds weird and it sounds really simple, but that's what it is. When Trouba's out there, he's our top defenseman on the team right now. At least that's how we're seeing it today. I want to see him go in there, clear the front of the net, take the body, win the loose puck battles, make that great clearing pass out, and that's what he has to do. His offense will come with confidence when his defense gets to that level that we know he can play at. And we saw glimpses of that. We saw that when he was with Winnipeg. We saw glimpses of that when he was with the Rangers this season. And that's just how I'm looking at it. I think he has now the caliber of players on the team. I don't want to say that.
That's my point.
Comparable to Winnipeg? Maybe another year it might be better than what he had in Winnipeg. You know, if Kakosoff's really hitting his potential, which we all hope he does this season, we can only – the pressure of the entire world is on Alexis Lafreniere. Let's all understand that. But if he plays the game that we know he can play, then you got Panarin. Now you're starting to see some really quality offensive threats. Of course, Nebanijad, Kreider. So if it's what you said, and you're right, he had a different quality of skilled player in Winnipeg than when he came to New York. Well, that's last year's problem. Now that excuse won't fly, because now he's got, if not the same, maybe a little bit better than what they had in Winnipeg.
I wouldn't go that far. Not yet.
We're not there. Not yet, but it's going to get there. Through this season, it's going to get there.
I don't know if it's going to be this season, though. It may be.
If it doesn't, let me do something. I think you're going to have Kreider playing a lot better. I mean, he played great with all the contract BS, right? Zimbanejad's always playing top in the league. Panarin's playing good. How many teams have three or four really top guys? Now, if Kako steps up, I don't know if Lafreniere is going to come out. Is Lafreniere going to come out? Well, you're right. Now we're going to know, because the excuse of Kako being tired is no more. last year when Kako came to the Rangers, he probably played 2 years straight. Now we had all this time off. Heck, they didn't even loan him to another team. So maybe the Rangers were thinking, I want him to be fresh whenever the time comes that he steps on training camp ice. That's the only reason why I could say they didn't
move
Kako, you know.
I'm with you, RP. I'm with you on the top guys on our squad. I'm not. There's no debate with Panarin, Zibanejad. You know, I'm a pro Carter guy, even though he has his inconsistencies. But the defense part of Carter, I don't have an issue with because he'll make up for it with play. You know, at the blue line, as far as he'll hit an occasional hit. It's the Buchneviches and the Kakos that are still the if stuff. You know, those are not proven commodities what Winnipeg had that Trouba thrived under. But hold on, there's a point you said that I think we have to still tie in. We haven't talked about it yet in this offseason, and that is Shesterkin and Gorkiev. You're going to have more that play that sets up the outlet play. I think we're going to have more of that now, especially with Shesterkin playing more games. I think that that's where the defensemen are going to thrive overall as a unit. And that includes the, Smith and Johnson, whatever time they happen to get. Because I think this opens up for a team. I think, you know, if Tony DeAngelo can still give you that 50 to 55 points, 60 points that he gave you last year, well, you know, put that in a scale down on
right.
You know, if it's whatever that number is on a condensed season, and the same thing for Fox. You know, whatever his 45 points, whatever it was last year for Fox, and we could get that same kind of production and his confidence going. I think you get that with Shesterkin. You have a guy like Trouba setting things up. Yeah, I think this looks better with the goaltenders, you know, not the downside of Hank, but the upside of the young goalies we have, the defenseman.
Oh, I agree. I agree. Shesterkin is – with his stick skills and his passing skill, can make the defenseman's job that much easier. You know, the offense has changed the way they attack the Rangers. And now, before when it was Lundqvist just dumping in, he's not going to play the puck. Now, it's totally different when Shesterkin's in it. Even when Gorgiev's in that, they both came up in a different style and a different skill set than what Hank had. And there's nothing against what Hank did for the 15 years with the Rangers, but now it's Shesterkin's team and. You're right. He is going to be able to really change the whole dynamic on the blue line from both, which is great.
So let me ask you this. Okay, let's get to Tony DeAngelo as well. Give me your thoughts on that. But now we put that on the table with the goalies, the unit, the defensemen as a whole. How well offensively and defensively? Do you see the Rangers as a unit? And then if you want to implement that, okay, how can Tony DeAngelo in particular thrive off of the new, the goalie combination that the Rangers are bringing to the table? Like, how do you see this all coming together now with, we adding the goalies and how we're going to play off the goalies?
Well, how would it play off the goalies is something that the Rangers defense are going to have to learn. It's not just going to happen right off the bat, because they've never had that before. So it's different for a fan to see, it's different for you and I to see when we see it on the ice. It's going to be really different for the guys to have it all the time. You know, Shesterkin played in 12 games all the second half of the season last year. But, I think he's going to get better with the puck. He's going to have more confidence. He's not going to be as nervous and concerned. He's going to find his groove like every other NHL goalie does. And as that develops, that's going to make the defenseman's job easier. They're not going to get banged as hard. There's not going to be that battle behind the net, because when Hank was in net, the puck was staying in the corner. Now, with these guys, they're going to be passing the puck on the boards. That's going to have to bring the defenseman in a little bit differently. He's going to have to bring the forwards back a lot faster, because the puck's going to be on the blue line faster than it used to be. So it's going to be not chipping the puck out as much. It should give the team more possession, which should give the team more offense, which leads to everybody getting more points. It's kind of a domino effect, I guess that's how I look at it.
Right.
You know, it's just Sorkin gets the puck to DeAngelo on top of the circle instead of behind the goal line in the corner. Now it's easy for him to get the puck out of the end and then transition to offense. So I think one thing works, and that's why I think it's going to make everybody better.
I agree.
Now, with you and I talking about it, will it happen on the ice? I don't know. Which has Sorkin started to get too cocky and and have giveaways, and then all our guys are caught up on the other side of the red line, and the plays back in our end on our man rushes and all. That's something he's going to have to work with. That's something Quinn may have to change his whole defensive scheme about. You know, maybe with Chet Sturken, he doesn't want the center coming all the way back into the corner the way he did the last these seasons, because that's how Quinn's defense was. He wanted the center all the way back, digging, and then moving up. Now he may not want that because, hey, Chesterkin's going to get you the puck on top of the circle. You don't need to come
exactly.
all the way back.
Exactly.
It's all for me to say how it's going to happen, because we haven't seen it yet on a consistent level. We haven't seen it game in and game out. And you know what's, I guess, I don't want to say scary, but complicates things is if you only have two exhibition games, if you only have a two-week training camp, Chesterkin's going to have to find this notch with his teammates on the fly. It's not going to be like when he came up in January, and at the time the Rangers didn't know if they were or weren't going to make the playoffs, but he was playing so well in Hartford, and everyone knew Hank was on his way out. It was the right time to bring the kid up. Now it's a little bit, you know, run and gun, trial and error. Got to accept a couple of mistakes here and there, some shitty goals because he made a bad play. It's all going to be new.
The question is, how many
games are we going to have to get the cobwebs out, to get the learning part over with? Because Chesterkin's a smart goalie right now. He's a really good goalie right now. So it's not like he has to go a long way before he gets comfortable. I'm not saying he's going to win a lot of games, but he's going to keep the Rangers in a lot of games. Similar to what Lundqvist did when he first came up. The same way, when he was standing on his head. But now the Rangers have the better team in front of Chesterkin than Hank probably had most of those years in front of him. But if we go with some of the rumors, I guess as you and I now going to transition to NHL talk a little bit, as you through these rumors and these talks, if you don't start January 1st and it goes to mid-January or February 1st, now you're only looking at a lot. Now it goes to a lockout mode, which means the years that there were lockouts, by the time teams got back on the ice, it was a 48-game sprint. It's no longer a marathon. 48 games is nothing. It's a blink of an eye.
It's barely half
of a regular NHL season.
Yeah.
It's crazy, and it's going to put a lot of heat on coaches. It's going to put a lot of heat on rookies. It's going to put a lot of heat on a lot of players on a lot of teams. But the way things are looking now, as everyone knows, since the NHL asked the players to defer more money, which did not go over well with many of the players, let me tell you.
I know.
I just don't know where they're going to...
Yeah, how much can you take?
I just don't know where they're going to go. That's it. And you know something? I know we're all talking about millions of dollars, and I understand that the players make a lot of money. I'm just trying to live check to check. But if you put that on the side and just look at what happened, the NHL, with the return to play in August, starting the new six-year deal, everybody loved each other, the world was great. They had the players the first of money for the season. The players were like, let's do it. Let's get back and finish our season. Let's get the Stanley Cup. And then now, out of the blue, about 2 weeks ago before they thought a training camp would start, they asked for another 10 or 15% more money. And apparently, from everything I've read, the players are like, absolutely not.
They didn't say it in that matter. They just
didn't have any more meetings with the NHL. It's kind of hard to negotiate if nobody's talking, like, officially.
The players sacrificed a lot, and they've sacrificed a lot with this deferment, and at the end of the day, the product is not, there's no product without the players, and the players, you know, this is their prime years in life, not just, you know, whatever they bounce from team to team as far as, you know, they get that one or two big paydays. I'm talking about their life. They're ever going to make this kind of money again, regardless, even in the COVID. So this deferment stuff, if I'm a player, that would kind of bother me, man. There's got to be a better way to attack that. And then this COVID stuff makes it harder for these decisions to be made on all levels. And I'm glad you brought up the deferment situation, because that's where the new team comes into play with the Kraken, as far as, you know, loaning money to the league and all that. I mean, I don't want to get down that road, because that could be a whole other podcast.
Right.
But, yeah, you're right. That would
be a whole other problem.
Right.
But you also remember, if you guys remember, before the return to play started, right when
the NHL and the players were trying to figure out how to get back on the ice in the middle of this whole COVID thing. Panarin had a comment and a statement about, you know, we really got to watch our escrow and deferred money now because they're just going to want more and more. And it was a weird statement because it kind of came out of left field and a lot wasn't made of it. A lot didn't come out of it, but it was there. So, you know, it was on the player's mind. Now you fast forward to now, you have this whole deferment thing being spoken about and talk about openings. And right when we went on the air, a hockey reporter, doesn't matter what his name was, put the NHL is soft floating the idea with the media that if no deal can be reached with which the NHLPA, it can unilaterally invoke force majeure and cancel the 2021 season. Our favorite, Anthony DeAngelo, shot back and retweeted back, nice thread, a deal was made, honor it. The NBA is already getting ready to go, and we aren't. We need hockey back. So if that's just now, DeAngelo is never soft-spoken on Twitter. That's what makes following him so much fun.
Right.
If that's just one player, if that's a sample of how the players feel, just in that one line, a deal was made, honor it, they're going to have trouble getting over this. And, you know, maybe the NHL took a bite out of too much of a bite here, and maybe Bateman's going to have to backtrack a little bit and figure it out. Because I guess it's safe to say.
I thought about that.
If the owners want fans to make money, which is understandable because attendance is such a huge thing,
right?
It's not going to happen this season.
No, it's not.
I don't see it happening in an indoor environment. Because they're blaming everything on indoor gatherings as it is right now. Okay, so the NHL has a decision to make. And they have the pressure of the NBA already working it out and coming back. Can you imagine if the NHL doesn't play this year and the NBA does? And they play in the same friggin' buildings and arenas? It'd be such a step backwards.
I know. But I get that's the whole thing, like, remember, we talked about this when Gary Bettman came up with the announcement, with the video conference, and they had the four stages, steps on getting the hockey season back. I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt because I could not find nothing, RP. This whole Thanksgiving break that gave me, whether I was on Ranger Prowl's Twitter or any other NHL Twitter account or just a particular source of what the hell's going on with the NHL. I mean, I go back to Pierre LeBrun's tweet from November 28th. You know, I mean, that's the only, I mean, there's nothing out there, RP, like ongoing contract and discussions between some NHL and NHLPA officials, but no developments of note again today, the keyword, the operative words, again, like they've been talking,
again.
Nothing's coming out of And then he said this upcoming week looms large, which is this week, and I still haven't found nothing. RP, before this episode, I was on the NHLPA Twitter, social media accounts. Nothing. I mean, there's not even to say we're working on it. We got something going on, a development. I mean, they're either playing that card they did before the COVID. I mean, not before the COVID, before the startup that we, there's nothing going on, or they're actually working on something and just not letting it out. And I'm hoping that is the case, RP. But you're right. This cannot be a one step forward, three step backwards type of deal. I'm not going to overreact. Given the benefit of the doubt that the league is handling it right, and then I want to throw this at you too, RP, because let's say the league is going to get going. Let's assume things are going to happen. Now we'll look at situations like in California. I mean, I don't know if you even saw this or heard about this or what happened.
Santa Clara,
in the Bay Area. You know, like the San Jose Sharks may not even have a where they're going to play. Like, if there's no okay, right now. As far as contact sports on any level, whether it's Pee Wee, Gordie Howe, or it doesn't matter, Gretzky, whatever, there's no contact sports. So meaning the San Jose Sharks, just throwing them into the mix, they may not even have a home. Like, they may have to play games in Vegas. They may have to go to like Arizona or something, kind of like with the with the football team has to play in another state. But what if you see more teams get in that situation, like let's say like the Kings or the Ducks or something like that, where the alternative and places, like, they're probably ironing this out behind the scenes, you know, because what if, okay, you know, you can't play in New York? Like, what, like, how do you look at all that, you know, throw that all into the mix, RP, as we talk, you know,
you
bringing
can't.
The season,
where
to play,
the problem.
Didn't talk about new divisions, Canadian League, Canadian divisions, what's your thoughts?
You really can't. That's the issue, because no one knows. COVID doesn't pick and choose. It's just attacking everybody again in all areas again. So you really have to rely on local government to decide fans, no fans, who can play, who can't play. And if the NHL wants to play this season, then they're going to have to be willing to do some crazy stuff like Major League Baseball did in their abbreviated season. And what the NFL is doing now, there is not going to be anything. Everything's going to be gray. There is no black and white. You could be playing at the Garden, and then, you know, and that's what I'm saying. Now, what happens, you know, if the Rangers get as sick as Baltimore? Are the leagues willing to keep rescheduling games? It's something that has to be discussed and worked out, but you have to know that some of the things you can't really put down on paper. There is no A plus B equals C, because you don't know. A and B could be not wiped out with COVID. You just don't know. So it's hard to tell everybody to keep an open mind and let's all do this together like they did with the return to play in August and July, when now the NHL wants to take a bigger bite out of the pie, because now the players are pissed with them and may not want to be as liberal in working with them. And I think that you haven't read anything is all – what needs to be said. The silence is the player's statement. The silence is Donald Fear saying, you know, this is what you wanted. My guys really don't have anything to say other than no. Come back with a different order, figure it out. But they're right. 4 months ago, everything was all hunky-dory. You knew there weren't going to be any fans to start of the next season. You knew COVID was going to be dictating what happened. Everyone knew the second wave was coming. How can you now out of the blue ask for more money? So decide what you want to do. You know, do you want to prorate salaries and only play a 50-game season? Well, then the players can't do anything about that. They have to take it. I don't think the players are going to get paid their full share if there's only a partial schedule set up. That's all these things need to be talked about. But if you guys want to be playing on January 1st, well, then you got to be at training camp next week. I mean, the NBA starts this week. Right, the NBA. And remember, the teams that didn't make it in the return to play are supposed to get more ice time, more practice time, because they haven't been on the ice since March at all. Well, they should have been on the ice this week now, and they're not. So you're already behind the eight ball. You're already playing from behind. So, I mean, today's December 1st. If you don't have something set up by next Monday, you can forget January 1st.
Let me ask you this. I understand the NBA. See, the NBA in this sense, because of the times and the way the teams are kind of, there's only one team in Canada, and they figured that out. That one team in Canada is now playing in Florida for this season. It all worked out because they only have one team in Canada to work out, where a good 30% of the teams are in Canada. Now, how does this work? Like, are we just going to say, if you're only a team that's in Canada, if you're all in Canada, you're only going to play in Canada? Because you can't just go back and forth between the borders all willy-nilly like before. That's just not going to happen. Because that prime minister
No,
is not
they're
going
all going to play in. Well, they're looking at doing some sort of. See, there's so many things that need to be worked out. They're also looking at doing some sort of hub city. Whereas,
well,
it's not like what it was in Edmonton, but I read like the Rangers would play a 3-game set in Boston. And then the Rangers would come home and play a 3-game set, let's say, against the Islanders. And then they get 5 or 6 days off. And they were going to rotate it, something like that. But they might break it down into divisions where you're not traveling as much. So, you know, a Western division could be San Jose, L.A., the Ducks, the Knights, the Coyotes, the Avalanche, and the Wild. And the North division could be, I don't know, the Bruins, Rangers, Islanders, Buffalo, New Jersey, Philly, Pitt, and Washington. And then you'd have another division that's Tampa Bay, Florida, Carolina, I guess the Predators. Who's left? Columbus. I'm looking at that. St. Louis and Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And now you might only be playing those teams. That's something similar to what baseball did. Baseball didn't travel all over the place. The Yankees played the Mets. They played the Red Sox. They kept it somewhat regional.
Right. That goes back to my point of this whole episode when I started with the defensemen, because I think this is going to be a top-heavy division season where mm-hmm. we're just going to play the Islanders, the Devils, the Flyers,
yeah.
anything on 95, anything in the Northeast,
mm-hmm.
pretty much the majority, if not all, the games, which I'm cool with as long as you get the games in and work out the money. I don't think any team from Canada, I think they're all going to, like, if you're in Alberta and you're playing a team from Ontario and Quebec, you know, that's you can't, you know, Canadian teams are just going to play against Canadian teams. And what sucks is,
right.
we all know, American players play on Canadian teams. You're going to be leaving your families. That's just going to be a personal disadvantage that maybe some players are not going to be able to live with. I don't know. You know
well,
what I'm
saying? I would think in that aspect, they might let the families come to there and quarantine and then not leave. And I
right.
think maybe that's how they're thinking that, I think they might be able to work out an arrangement with Canada, telling them if our American families come over with our players, and then we're just going to stay in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to travel back and forth for that. I don't know how that's going to fly. I know they said they're not doing anything like a hub that they had with the playoffs. That was definitely taken out of the equation. So you got to see. You know, another problem is going to be is how do you play for the Stanley Cup if one of the Canadian teams make it to the finals. Now what do you do?
Oh, man.
Now you're going to have a Canadian team come to America and stay here for
RP,
a seven game. How do you do the playoffs?
You got to play on Zoom. You're going to have to play on NHL 2K1. You got to play on Xbox.
I'm telling you, it's so much to break down and get into an arrangement and get on paper before you can start training camp, and they're just running out of time because they're fighting over money. The complaining that I did as a fan about baseball almost not playing and only playing that ridiculous 60-game schedule because the sides couldn't agree upon money is now what hockey's going to do, but it's worse for hockey because we're the fourth major sport in a four-horse race.
Right.
People always go and flock and watch baseball, and they'll watch basketball, and we already saw that they go back to watching football regardless of any social events and whatever. But this is in Canada. It's hard enough to get fans to watch a hockey game. If you pull this crap, they're just not going to turn it on. And that's going to be a real devastating thing. They really have to figure it out. And I hate to say
yeah.
it, but it's actually in the NHL's hands. I think the PA is just not going to take more money out. If the owners don't want to do it, well, then the owners are going to have to come out and say, we don't want to play because we can't make any money, and then the fans will hate the owners. But the players right now look good, and I think the players not saying anything. It just became like a PR game. It became a PR game. Who's going to look better at the end of the day when the dust settles?
The players.
And right now it's going to be the players, and the players
right.
aren't going to do anything. They're not making, if you look, like you said, you saw the PA website, they're not making any comment. They're not making any, that thing that D'Angelo said was one of the first things I've seen anyone say about anything. But it does show you what the player is thinking on your deal. You signed a 6-year deal. You knew what was going on. You got to honor it. So we'll have to wait
right.
and see what happens. By next Tuesday, we'll know a lot more than we know today.
We'll see. Either we'll be back next Tuesday or following Tuesday, depending on the news, and we'll get on and discuss this. Give me some final thoughts on this. I think it's a good episode on the defenseman and then in the NHL season. Because, if the news comes down the pipe, we'll have to jump on and discuss this. But final thoughts from you, RP. I think this is fantastic dialogue as far as, you know, talking about the blue line and, of course, the rest of the league and all the moving parts.
Yeah, it's been a real tough downtime. There's not a lot to talk about, even less now that the players aren't saying anything. So you just got to, just stay positive and just hope for the best like we have through all this. Aside from hockey, just everyone just stay smart. Try to not get this COVID, and let's just get through it and get by and be better people for it, and then everything will start to fall back in place. Keep following Ranger Proud. There's not a lot of news out there, guys, but whatever I find, whatever I see, whatever I can write with Forever Blue Shirts or with Empire Sports Media. I appreciate the feedback. If there's anything you guys want to hear about or want me to write about or follow up, shoot me a text, shoot me a direct message, and I'll be love to try to write something because it's getting bone dry right now. We were expecting to be running about training camps and rosters and getting ready for a January 1st start, and now we're back to talking about nothing or money again, which just seems to be the talk of the last 9 months. So just hang in there. We're going to get through this together, guys.
Let me say this real quick, RP. Thank you very much. Let me say this real quick, RP, and I can get your feedback. Now, if they do this realignment, right, I think they probably they may have to go to a bubble situation if they want to really get a bubble hub, whatever you want to call it. I just think these California teams are going to have to move to, you know, temporarily go to Vegas. I don't think they're going to have an issue with that. But if you're talking about, you know, anything in New York and Jersey, that's going to be interesting. You know, there's not going to be fans. I don't see that happening. But that may be interesting as far as, you know, you can make that work because it's like four or five teams like Philly, Jersey, Islanders. New York. I mean, that's not even a lot of commuting. You're not getting on a plane like that. You're not even getting on the plane at all, you know. And if you're throwing – I don't know how it's going to be. Maybe Pittsburgh might be in that mix. I don't know. But
you could probably put Pittsburgh, Boston, and the Rangers, the Islanders, the Sabres, the Devils, and the Flyers, and the Caps. I mean, they can move the Penguins out if they wanted to and put them with the Blue Jackets and put the Caps up in there. But I would put the Caps up with the Rangers because that's all a 995 run, it's just about, except for Buffalo.
Right.
But Steve, you got to remember one thing. You can't have one set of teams in a bubble and one set not.
I know that
the NHLPA is not going to say to
how would you
to one
that's
you can't bubble. They won't. They're not going to bubble. They won't play if they have to bubble. They're not going to spend 5 months away from their families. Not when the NFL is traveling every week. Major League Baseball was traveling all over the place. Even though I understand they played outside, but they were still battling COVID early on. Florida got it. Baltimore had it. It was a problem all throughout. I can almost 100%
right.
guarantee you there's no way the NHLPA is going to agree to a full bubble.
But
they're just not going to do
it. You're right about that. But here's the
they
thing.
May do it in the playoffs. They may say once the playoffs start, we're going to go back to what we did, not the regular season.
No, you're absolutely right. They can do it both ways in that aspect because they're going for what the NHL got praised for is with no positive COVID because they were in a bubble situation. These players are going to get, somebody's going to get sick. We just know that.
You're going to get it. Yeah.
Right.
It just,
you know how
it happened everywhere else, right?
Huh?
You know, the only thing the NHL might get out of the NBA starting 3-4 weeks earlier is to see how they get it playing indoors with all the travel. Because if you think about it, the NHL and NBA have parallel setups. They're all playing indoors.
Right.
They're all traveling more or less to the same cities. They're all traveling more or less through the same airports. So the NHL might get an idea of problems and how to handle it.
You're right. You're right about all that. Look at the Knicks and the Rangers situation. Hypothetically speaking, what if there was a bad outbreak with the Knicks at the Garden? And then now the Rangers can't play home games or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you go about that? Because that has nothing to do with your league, but you're playing in the school.
But you have plenty without fans. There are so many different facilities you could play in. They could go to Connecticut. They could play at Hartford. They could play in the Prudential Center with their home games.
Right.
If there are no fans, who cares where they're playing? That's
right.
How you get around it. Here's a better question, though. What happens if a breakout happens at Tarrytown at the practice facilities? Where they both share the same things.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean,
that's where the Rangers and Knicks have to be careful, because the Rangers and Knicks will be most of the work. They won't be at the Garden except for games, because neither team wants to go into Manhattan. They're going to want to stay away from that environment because COVID's rampant and all. So they're going to stay up in Westchester where it's a little bit better. And then you're going to have the Knicks practicing because they started today's Tuesday. They reported to Tarrytown today.
Right.
To start with all that pre-COVID, okay? Now, if the Rangers are there and one player gets in on either team, now you got an issue. And now if it comes out after a team played Now, one team just knocked out two hockey teams or two basketball teams or vice versa. It's something, that's what I'm trying to say. It's something that there is no black and white. The entire process is gray. What we're seeing done in the NFL, the NHL, and the NBA have to be ready for, because it's going to happen once you start traveling.
Oh, absolutely.
And they,
I mean, I think we
and
know
they
that.
Should pay attention to how, and I give kudos to the NFL, because they handled the Denver Broncos situation totally different from the Baltimore Ravens situation that's going on now, because of how the players put themselves in a predicament to either get the virus or potential to get the virus. Meaning Baltimore was safe. Their coach screwed up and didn't tell them, and players got it. But in Denver, those dumbasses just decided to go to meetings and hang out and do whatever without wearing any masks indoor and got caught. That's why they weren't allowed to cancel or postpone their games. And I think the NHL right. and NBA have to do the same thing. If you don't want to follow protocol in this crazy environment, well, then I'm not giving you I'm not working out to change your games around, because you're going to have to change games, Steve, right? We already know that. You're going to have to move your schedules around. And so these are all things that everyone's got to be looking at, because just because it's happening in the NFL and outdoors, it's definitely going to happen to the NHL and NBA and indoors. It just seems that this virus really spreads indoor. Heck, why didn't the NHL look to do more outdoor hockey games? There are no fans anyway. I would have thought that was the way they were going to go. But it didn't work out that way. That could have been a lot safer, but I guess logistics and money, especially since they're making no money, it didn't work out. But to what you're saying, there's a very good chance teams that share NBA and NHL may have other problems.
Right. The presence of physically
not everybody. Not everybody's Florida when they're like, I don't care how bad it is, I'm not closing. I don't think that's healthy, too. I don't think here's the other problem. Are teams going to be willing to go to play Florida and Tampa Bay indoors where the numbers and the virus is so bad today, right now? That's another thing that has to be worked out with the CBA. So it's there's so much to be done, and a lot of it hasn't been done yet because they can't get over the money issue.
I mean, look at the layers in it.
It's the truth. Crazy. And it's the same thing with the NBA. Do they want to go play the Magic? I mean, it's horrible out there right now. These teams want to go sit there overnight in a hotel and constant worry about getting it. And then, you know, especially in the NBA when you don't have that much of a bench. You can't do it like this. There has to be so many things to go over and to accept. I forgot, we were watching something on the NFL yesterday, and one of the announcers said, you know, these players accepted this when they signed on the play. So they can't get mad that they keep postponing games. Not as if they're talking about the Steelers, Steve. Like, they got postponed 3 weeks in a row or something. Like, or three different times. You signed on the play. You knew this might happen.
But
you just got to deal with it. Well,
yeah, but at least they've dealt with it because they're still undefeated. So, I mean, they dealt with it. So
right, but they had a good point the other day because they were talking about Baltimore, and they said, you know, their coach screwed up and some of the guys got infected. But obviously they didn't stay away because they had another positive today before they left to go to Pittsburgh. That's like 10 in a week. So they're doing something wrong. And Pittsburgh said, we're doing everything we can do not to get this. We're not hanging out. We didn't celebrate Thanksgiving. Right. We didn't do this. We didn't do that. And all these other teams are trying to get away with it and get in court. And who gets messed up? The Pittsburgh Steelers schedule. So
right.
I can understand that if the Steelers players were a little irate, and they're allowed to be Union Brothers and all. They got a good point. They do have a good point. If the players in the NHL
COVID.
Want this to work, they're going to have to be as diligent as they were in the return to play.
This is what they should do before they went to the bubble. For every COVID test that other team gets, you should get a 7-point spot. So if we got to move the game back twice, that's 20. That's 14 points, 3 times 21. That's how they should do it.
I was waiting for the forfeit. I got to tell you, they were talking about the one rumor I heard was if they couldn't play today, they were going to have to forfeit. Because now it changed Baltimore's next two games because they couldn't play today. Well, because they couldn't play Monday. They were supposed to play Dallas on Thursday. That got canceled. Pittsburgh was supposed to play another night. That got canceled. It just all because no one's following the protocols. I mean, a coach got fined $100,000 if not yelling at a referee without his mask on. I forgot who it was, but I read it. I mean, these guys just got to – if they're not going to take it seriously, then don't play. It's out there.
Right.
You know, you're playing. You're making your money. Follow the protocol. You don't have to be in a bubble. You're not stuck at home. You got to follow the protocols to get and that's what the NHL should be looking at on top of all the other BS about money and all. It's how are we going to travel and do all this? Even if they're traveling on a train, even if they're on a bus going from New York to Boston, you still got to worry about it. You still got to go through the terminals, if you've got to fly airports, there's so much involved in it. It's impossible to think no one NHL player or team is going to be affected if you start.
Oh, yeah. Of course, that's definitely going to happen. They might have to take bets on that, take Vegas bets, who the over or under on positive COVID tests. RP,
you're
out of time. We're going to have to man, there's a lot of things you said we have to revisit, man. And then we'll have more news, and we can really align where we stand as the time goes. Ranger Proud, Steve, Sangre Azul, KGYR, Bleed Blue.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Bleep blue, bleep blue, bleep blue, bleep blue, bleep blue, bleep blue.